Okay, good evening everyone. Welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. And before I start, I would just like to acknowledge on behalf of the Local Planning Panel the original custodians of the land we are on, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to Elders past and present. And the Local Planning Panel also acknowledges the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who currently reside in this area. The meeting tonight is to consider the development applications which are listed on the agenda. Panel members have read agenda papers for the meeting, including submissions received, and have had a briefing from council staff on the items on the agenda. Panel members for tonight are myself, Richard Pearson, as the independent chair. I've got Peter Romey immediately to my right, and Sean Carter next to him. They're the independent expert members. And I have on my left Amelia Thorpe, who is the community representative. I welcome everyone tonight, and please be assured the panel will be making decisions tonight on planning merits of each application, following consideration of any views expressed tonight and submissions that have been received. Determinations will be by a majority of votes of members present and entitled to vote. If votes are tied, the chair will have a casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions will be recorded in the minutes as part of the decision, and if we go against officer recommendation, the panel will state our reasons for that. Please also be advised is a thing that we call a relevant to memo. Also, please turn your mobile phones off. I always forget that. There is a relevant to in relation to item 3, the development application for 39A Elizabeth Bay Road, Elizabeth Bay, and that memo addresses three submissions that have been made after the notification of the planning panel agenda. Will be discussed by the panel at the relevant item. Copies of the memo are available in the foyer and on the council's website. So the format tonight will be that each item, the planning manager of assessments will provide an overview of each application as they are considered, key issues raised and the recommendations of council staff. Then the opportunity for members of the public who have registered to speak, followed by the applicant and or the applicant's representative who may like to address any issues raised by members of the public. Please note there is a 3-minute time limit for each speaker. A bell will ring at 3 minutes. If you have something terribly important to add after 3 minutes, we can briefly extend the period if necessary. I do ask each speaker be heard in silence while addressing the panel and courtesy and respect be shown throughout the meeting. Please ensure no personal criticism is directed at any speaker or council staff. Any such criticism would be contrary to the panel's code of conduct and will not be accepted by the panel. The panel may ask questions of speakers to clarify our understanding of what is being said. And if you have registered to speak, your address will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are available on the city's website. Please note no recording or filming other than this. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application. This may involve adjourning to confer amongst ourselves outside the meeting before reconvening to make our decision, or we might make the decision immediately following any public submissions. If the panel considers more information is required before making a decision, we are able to defer the matter for consideration at a later date. So I now move to the formal agenda and start with item 1, which is disclosures of interest. So in accordance with clause 4.9 of the Code of Conduct for the Local Planning Panel, all panel members have signed a declaration of interest in relation to each matter on the agenda tonight. Mr. Carter has disclosed a reasonably perceived pecuniary interest in relation to item 3, the development application for Elizabeth Bay Road, and item 5 in relation to Abercrombie Stoop, Chippendale, and item 6 in relation to Kent Street, Sydney, as his firm, Carter Williamson Architects, is currently working with Weir Phillips Heritage and Urbis on 2 projects. Mr. Romey has disclosed a reasonably perceived, it's not a pecuniary interest, a reasonably perceived conflict of interest, and that was the same in relation to Mr. Carter. These are not pecuniary interests, but they're reasonably perceived conflicts of interest in relation to item 5, development application for Abercrombie Street, Chippendale, as he has worked on other projects with Zahn's Architects, and item 6, for Kent Street, Sydney, as Mr. Romey's wife works part-time for Urbis. I think the same also applies in relation to item 5. Now, given the conflicts of interest, Mr. Carter will step out for deliberation on item 3, and as two panel members have a conflict of interest in relation to items 5 and 6, and we therefore can't achieve the quorum for those items, which is 3, we will need to defer items 5 and 6 to a later meeting. We did try to organise a replacement panel member, but unfortunately that has not been possible, so we do need to defer items 5 and 6 tonight. We will still deal with item 3, but Mr. Carter will be absent for discussion and determination of that matter. Now, other members have disclosed any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interest in any matters on the agenda for this meeting. Item 2, confirmation of the minutes. They have been endorsed by the chair of that meeting, the minutes of the 5th of December 2018, and the panel notes those minutes. We now move to the substantive agenda, and we start with item 3, the development application for 39A Elizabeth Bay Road. Elizabeth Bay, I'm going to ask Mr. Carter to leave the room in accordance with his conflict declaration, and which he has now done, and I'll ask Mr. Mackay to briefly run through the salient details of this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So this application seeks consent to change the use and carry out alterations and additions to the existing building at 39A Elizabeth Bay Road. And the application also includes the demolition of existing rooftop structures and the construction of a new two-level structure on the top of the building, which will be set back from Elizabeth Bay Road. The site is within a B4 zone, and the development is permissible with consent, and the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. The application has been notified on a number of occasions due to the application being modified. 623 owners and occupiers have been notified, and 27 unique submissions have been received. The submissions relate to a number of issues, including overshadowing, loss of privacy, loss of views, noise and antisocial behaviour, car parking impacts and odour and exhaust impacts. This slide shows the site identified in red and the submissions from adjoining and surrounding properties identified in blue. So this is the site. It's located on the east side of Elizabeth Bay Road, just to the south of the roundabout. This is the existing building on site, viewed from Elizabeth Bay Road. And this is a view of the site within its immediate context. This is a view of the site viewed from the rear, from Bradley Lane. And this is a view of the existing rooftop deck on the existing building looking towards 39 Elizabeth Bay Road immediately to the south. This is the existing roof structures that are to be demolished, and roughly in that location, set back from Elizabeth Bay Road, there'll be a two-level addition. This is a proposed basement floor plan, which will be a lounge facility for the guests of the hotel. The ground floor plan, which will provide the main entry and reception area for the hotel and a couple of accessible rooms. And then on the levels above, levels 1 to 3, you have hotel rooms. And then on the top of the building, you have the two-level addition, which is set back from Elizabeth Bay Road. That's a lower level of that addition, which contains three rooms. And then on the upper level, which has a smaller footprint, is an additional room. This is an illustration of a sample room layout. And the next set of slides are the elevations of the development. So this is the Elizabeth Bay Road elevation, the south east or rear elevation, Bradley's Lane, the southwest elevation, and then the northern elevation of the addition. This illustration shows the built form of the proposed addition at the top of the building, so you can see it's set back from Elizabeth Bay Road, and the upper level has a smaller footprint than the lower level of that addition. This slide provides some architectural details and details of the materials for that addition. In terms of compliance with the key development standards, there is a non-compliance with the 18-metre height limit that applies to the site, with the maximum height of the building being 20.6 metres. So there's a non-compliance there. That non-compliance is subject to a clause 4.6 variation request. The proposed development complies with the maximum 4-to-1 floor space ratio on the site. In the DCP, there is a four-storey height in storeys control. The existing building is a four-storey or four-to-five-storey building, four storeys when viewed from Elizabeth Bay Road, five storeys when viewed from the rear. With the addition on top, it would be a six-to-seven-storey building, although in the immediate vicinity of the site when viewed from Elizabeth Bay Road, because that upper level is set back, it will present as a four-storey building. There's a non-compliance with the floor-to-ceiling height requirements. And in terms of hours of operation, obviously a hotel will be a 24-hour operation, but the recommendation is proposing to restrict the hours of use of the communal rooftop. So the issues essentially are height non-compliance and potential overshadowing impacts in the design of the rooftop addition. In terms of the height non-compliance, there's no significant amenity impacts resulting from the non-compliance with the height limit. The impact on the conservation area and the streetscape is limited due to the setback of the addition and its relationship with surrounding buildings. The height and siting of the addition is generally consistent with a previously approved development that was approved by the Land and Environment Court. And the siting at the loft level or the upper level of the addition has been amended to reduce the overshadowing impacts of the proposal. In terms of overshadowing, there is some minor overshadowing across the side boundary to the bedroom window and some open space of units at Elizabeth Bay Road, 39 Elizabeth Bay Road. The impacts are considered acceptable, and in relation to the window, given that the window is to a bedroom and not a primary living space. So that's a photograph of the bedroom window that's overshadowed by the development. In terms of the design of the rooftop addition, there are conditions in the recommendation requiring some design refinement, in particular requiring a minimum of 50% perforation to the perforated screens that will cover the addition, and in terms of the colour of the proposed metal cladding to the lower level of the addition. This slide just shows an illustration of what the perforated screens might look like, and that condition requiring a minimum 50% perforation to ensure there's adequate access to sun and light and ventilation to that upper level. So the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So I have a number of registered speakers. I'll start with David Hand. David's here. So, David, if you could just come forward and sit in the chair immediately in front of you. And when you're ready to go, just press the button and speak into the microphone, please. So press the button. Yeah.
Thank you. My concern relates primarily to the garbage issue because of all the noise in the mornings and the issue of smoking on the street. I don't know whether it's a council smoking receptacle that's been placed there while it's been a backpacker's, but there is one out there. And people, when it was a backpacker's, used to mill in the street and smoke and carry on. I wrote to the planning officer last week. Point three, where it was made clear that the site was landlocked, that was inconsistent with the point 26, where the council transport planning officer had noted that the rear of the site had vehicle access adequate for waste collection and other servicing requirements, which it patently doesn't. So it would appear that this whole report was based on what the planning of what the transport planning officer had said. Well, he clearly hadn't been to the site because you can't get at it from the rear at all. So the issue is that all the garbage and all the deliveries have to come from the front of the building. I'd like to understand how the garbage is going to be dealt with, where it's going to be kept. In a 30-room hotel, there's a lot of will be a lot of delivery of laundry and so on. Currently, there's a laundry truck that comes at 4 o'clock every morning to service another building, which is a rickety old truck which makes a hell of a noise, more than any of the garbage trucks. So I think it's important that any deliveries to such a site are made at reasonable hours, consistent with what's required in other buildings. I think that's all I've got to say, but I'd like to hear how it's going to be dealt with. Thank you.
David, so what we'll do is we'll go through all the speakers for this item, and then Louise Kerr, who's the Executive Manager Development, will respond to the issues raised, including those issues just raised by David. So I'll call forward now Alex Ding, if Alex is in the room. Okay, so we've got this new one.
Thank you. I am representing my mother, who lives in the building next door, 39 Elizabeth Bay Road. She's in apartment 11. If you look on figure 5, that is her apartment that is shown right there. That, contrary to what has been suggested, the new development, the additional 2.6 metres above the height limit will, as you can see, go beyond what's existing. That will result in her main living area at the bottom there and her kitchen, which is on the bottom there. Her entirety of her living area faces north, and that will be not only overshadowed but also looked down upon, both visually, noise-wise. All of those issues will clearly be of great concern if this were to go up another 2.6 metres. That's her main bedroom that sits above it. It is north-facing. It gets wonderful sunlight all winter, and I can show you photos if you like, but the sunlight not only goes through there, right to the back of the bedroom, but right through the bottom level at the moment, through winter. That will all be lost. There's no reason why this proposal should succeed in the context of it being above a regulated height limit. You know, some might say let it slide, it's a small amount. That's the sort of thinking where you start with petty larceny, that's fine. If somebody shows up at your house, takes your TV, that becomes not so fine, etc. So I don't think that should be allowed. In terms of safety and security, right now there have been people who've tried to scale that wall to get access, because there is no gap between there and they can get ready access. So if it goes up, they just have to jump down. Far safer, less difficult, and my mother is 77 years old. She's been there for 30 years. There is a great security issue with the increase in height. If you look on the southern end, there's a rooftop there on the adjacent building which abuts. She's had people come through there before in the past, scale the roof and onto her terrace. So what we've done is install a hard screen right across the length of that possible egress or ingress to prevent that from happening again. Top of the balcony, it's concrete, to the roof. So that's a big issue. You speak of the fact that there will be no amenity loss. Well, I can tell you this, that in her 30 years there, the council have had to attend on so many occasions due to people on that balcony, partying, basically, music, and then they get progressively drunker through the night, so much so that I think about 3 years ago, wine bottle, high quality, so not just a backpacker or a student, thrown, it cracked the whole of the front glass of her building. That was admitted to by the adjoining owner and paid for by them, the fix. Police were called, etc. So there is a condition of consent existing which doesn't permit them to actually have access to that. But, you know, she's quite tolerant. She's been there for a long time. And so she lets them go for a little bit, but then she'll sort of say, can you please leave? And profanities come back regularly. And this sort of development, which will encourage more people to go onto that space in a much more conducive environment, I suspect, is the sort of thing that will, I think, be exacerbated.
Oh, sorry, Alex, would you, Mr. Romy would like to...
Mr. Din, thank you for your presentation. Just looking at the, if you had the document in front of you, on page 84, which is the page that shows the proposed roof terrace floor plan, can you...
Are you referring to page 84?
In the hard copy, yeah, which shows the proposed roof terrace floor plan. Your mother's apartment, I'm taking it, is here at the... there. Okay.
So the issue right now is that because of the reasonably difficult access that people get to that rooftop, so, you know, the lift doesn't kind of go up there, etc. When they do get up there, that's when the issues arise, clearly. But if you're going to actually build something where people are being accommodated there and paying money to get access to that outdoor area, they will basically be looking at my mother from dawn till dusk.
Alex, thank you for that. We will. So Louise will respond at the end. But my understanding is that the proposal through the council officer recommendation is that that area will become non-trafficable. So you actually won't be able to be on that area. In response to the sort of issues you're raising, this is an attempt, a suggestion from the staff to try to improve the situation for people such as your mother, so that they won't have the same amenity impacts they have now and that they won't get worse through this proposal.
Two things. Conditions of consent don't work, right? If people can get access, and if it's easier access, which this is, they'll get there, number one. Two, the height will be different, i.e. it will be higher. Right? So whereas now she looks down a good 2 metres, etc. down, there is a greater ability to clearly see what's going on and to prevent activity which is unsociable, get people in there to deal with a situation before it gets to a state which is far worse than what it could be.
So that's fine, Alex. I thank you for your presentation. I will leave any further response to after we've heard from the other speakers, but I just wanted to make that comment in passing. I appreciate your response. So what I'll do now, I will ask Lisa Bella. who I think is speaking on behalf of local resident. Yep. And then we've got Nicole Bertu. Yep. So, okay, we'll go in that order. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I've inspected this building on a number of occasions and have also prepared three submissions since December 2017 for the owners' corporation that reside at 39 Elizabeth Bay Road, Elizabeth Bay. The site in question is directly to the south of the subject site. My conclusion is that the proposal in the current form remains inadequate. It remains inadequate due to the unresolved design and building issues relating to the plant, its size, what's happening to the lift overrun, conditions of consent that require all sorts of things to be restricted, the air conditioning details that haven't been given. These unresolved issues have the potential to significantly affect the residential amenity of units within 39 Elizabeth Bay Road, Elizabeth Bay. The contributing factors that result in this significant land use conflict have to do with the close proximity of private open space areas and windows along the northern and eastern elevation of my client's property. Therefore, it would seem reasonable that I understand council officers try to resolve issues by conditions of consent, but because of the special circumstances surrounding the context of these two properties, I don't consider it is reasonable, and I consider it's unreasonable that the residents don't have a look at the details relating to the air conditioning plant. They don't have an opportunity to review the acoustic assessment, and we don't actually understand where the lift overrun will end up. I mean, I don't know anybody that goes and pays money in a hotel that has to climb a stairwell with their luggage, but this development proposal is suggesting that they do that because the lift stops at the level below, and so if you're staying at the upper level, you have to carry your luggage up a stairwell. I question that. I question that it hasn't been resolved. My understanding that is for the panel to be able to review the height, that they have to consider the objectives of the height control in the LEP, and objective A is to ensure the height of development is appropriate to the condition of the site and the context. Well, I consider that there's no merit on the table to be able to approve the height beyond the maximum height limit. We have discussed the issues of visual imposition and overshadowing. If those issues exist, it's not reasonable to extend the height beyond the maximum control. Had there been no overshadowing on anybody's property and had there been no visual imposition concerns, well, then we could consider those issues. I just want to quickly talk about... Was that my bell? Yes. Yes, sorry. I want to talk about the use of the basement level, and I've looked at the controls and whether a CDC could be issued by the development at a later stage to put in the use as a restaurant. And depending on how council stamp it and what we call this space, there are uses that can go to via a complying development certificate, and that concerns me because at the moment we're saying it's just a servery, but that's because of our objection submission where we wrote about, well, show us what the plant looks like, how's the kitchen going to be serviced. So the way to resolve it was to call it a servery, but, you know, it's within the commercial viability of the new owner of this site to ensure that that space is leased out and isn't a lounge. I mean, land values in Sydney are just too valuable for it to be used as a kind of ancillary lounge area when it can be a restaurant or another use. I did want to talk about the private terrace, and I note that it is non-trafficable. I believe that's a good outcome for the building. Notwithstanding that, we'd like to see a condition on any consent notice, that that is very clear that it is not trafficable and deals with the issue of maintenance, how the security door is locked, because that has the issue of affecting the residents of my property in a significant way, given the proximity. And then lastly, we've got the air conditioning that remains unresolved, its size, its location, and any acoustic issues. Again, I request the panel to have those details put on the table so the residents can view it. I don't think in this case it's reasonable to have it dealt with by a delegated officer of council when the impacts of the location, size and acoustic issues are so significant to the tenants and residents of the building. Thank you.
Thank you. So Nicole Virtu, if you would like to come forward and address the panel, please.
Hello, my name's Nicole Virtu. I've been an owner in the building of 39 Elizabeth Bay Road for over 20 years. I'm also a resident in that building, and I'm also the chair of the Strata Committee, and I am in part representing the other residents who could not attend this meeting today. I'm requesting and will continue to request that this development application is rejected. The height impact has material environmental impacts on our building. We believe that the information provided for this development application is inadequate. The conditions proposed are also inadequate to protect the long-term residents. The height and bulk of the extensions clearly show overshadowing of our building. We believe that it's merely not the overshadowing as in light, but it's also the passive solar effects that it has on our building, because this is our only north-facing wall and therefore has a material impact for us. We have read the submissions that say that it'll be minimal. However, what's being failed to realise is the bedrooms that have been pointed out in the diagram earlier in the presentation are actually a large master bedroom, and so it acts as a second living room for most of the people who live in the two-bedroom apartment. So it's a way to get away from what is a combined kitchen living area. So saying that it's only impacting a bedroom because you're only going to be in there at night is incorrect for what is actually happening in the building. I'm astounded that a council that inundates the residents with leaflets repeatedly stating its strong support for sustainability would support an exception to the height restrictions that has a negative impact on the environmental impacts on our building by removing both light and passive heating. I do need some water. Sorry. Further, the inadequate information and conditions are at multiple levels. It leaves open enormous scope creep over time. The applicant has had more than 12 months since the original application to provide the information sought. Some of the issues that we raise is the suggestion that there will be a servery in the basement replacing the kitchen. Having looked at the Oxford Dictionary, that says a room which a meal will be served. So, you know, we're so close to being a restaurant that the scope creep will occur over time, and I cannot believe that such limited conditions have been imposed. If we look at the door that opens to the rooftop terrace has been discussed, the suggestion is merely to put a condition on the private use. I can tell you as a resident living in this building, having been subjected to the prior condition, which said it would only be used during certain hours, that condition has been unenforceable. And I cannot believe that we would repeat the mistake that we've been suffering through for the last 10 years. The noise impact from that building is absolutely significant. If you look at the interface to our building, you look at the stairwell that goes between, it acts as just a conduit for all the noise coming from the rooftop directly into the bedrooms. One of the residents also claims, even with the windows closed and the air conditioning on, the party noise is just not sustainable. We have seen incredible antisocial behaviour from this rooftop, and consistently over time, repeatedly, you have short-term tenants. They are not residents. They don't care about the impact that they're having on their neighbours. They are not there for a long period of time. We've had, I think you've had one incident described to you of the missile being thrown, the wine bottle. There have been multiple incidents, and not merely to the top balcony, but the other balconies that face down and face 39 Elizabeth Bay Road. We've also had the enormous abuse and everything else like that. Not being able to contact council officers during the night and to enforce such conditions is just hopeless at this point in time. We are very, very concerned on the size, height and the acoustic treatment of any ancillary facilities, air conditioners, mechanical equipment. We spend a lot of time as a strata committee monitoring any such things that are implemented in our building. We have a high acoustic test applied to anything that's installed, whether it be wooden floors, anything like that, to preserve our amenity in our building. To have someone else in an adjacent building that would have an impact on us is not an acceptable outcome. I would therefore strongly state again that we respectfully request that this application is rejected until the additional detail and better design solutions are actually submitted to us for approval.
Thank you very much. What I'm going to do now, if we have a couple of representatives of the applicant here. We've got Matt O'Donnell, town planner, and I've got Ashkan Mossigan, the architect. It would actually be good if one or both of you were able to address some of the issues that have been raised by residents and or to raise any other issues that you want to raise in relation to council officers' assessment report. Please take a seat and if you can identify yourself when you speak and press the button, that would be excellent. Thank you.
My name is Matt O'Donnell. I'm the town planner for the project, and this is Ashkan Mostigam from Mostigam Associates, the architect. We were going to raise, in relation to probably four different conditions, where we would seek amendment to that or deletion from them. Probably one of them is condition 2D, which has been a bit of a hot topic tonight anyhow in terms of access to the roof terrace. The operators of the hotel have accepted the communal access to the roof terrace is probably an unrealistic outcome. However, what they would seek is that condition to allow access from room 1 to the roof terrace. Now, room 1 has a maximum occupancy of 2 people. At present, if you don't mind, I was speaking. At present, there is 40 student rooms in the building, or with access to that roof terrace. So understandably, we accept the residents' concern. What I will make clear is the operators of the hotel currently operate a couple of different properties within the city. They are not a backpackers. They are not student accommodation. They are a boutique hotel targeting business travellers. We would seek that condition 2D be amended to allow access to that terrace from room 1. For guests only, not visitors of guests, and that can obviously be monitored by hotel staff. That is obviously a premium product for the operators of the hotel, and so they want that flexibility, but they accept that the whole occupancy of the hotel cannot enter that terrace. So that's probably in the first instance. I'll come back to some of the objectives. I'll concentrate on the conditions, then I'll come back to some of the objectives' concerns. In terms of the use of the basement level as a guest lounge or servery or however you want to describe it, discussions obviously as part of the resolution of the design of the proposal really demonstrated it was probably going to be very difficult to have some form of kitchen restaurant use in there. Ideally, the applicant would have sought that initially to offer a breakfast offering, but that's because of design complications with flu, etc., and the heritage constraints of the area, that has now been conceded. What they would seek, given it's a basement level, it's essentially underground, is an extension of the hours of operation rather from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m, and that is simply to allow guests of the hotel and their visitors, who might be colleagues, to meet to prepare for meetings or what have you. There's no alcohol served in there. The hotel staff will be managing that. It's all included in the plan of management. It's purely just a meeting space for generally civilised human beings who stay in these types of hotels to go about their daily business.
Matt, which condition are you seeking amendment? Condition 5.
The next one is bicycle parking and end-of-trip facilities. Ashkan can talk a bit more to the detail of it in a moment, but essentially I was involved in the Spices Hotel development just on the other side of Potts Point in Victoria Street, a very similar offering to what's been proposed here, only approved in the last couple of years under the same controls. There was no requirement for staff parking for bicycles or customers, and again, the type of clientele, they're not going to really bring their pushbike to stay in this hotel. It's not that type of hotel. If it was a backpackers or a boarding house, understandably, but that obviously the condition then creates some implications in terms of the internal layout, especially in relation to operational requirements for the hotel in terms of storage of bedding, cleaning products, etc. And Ashkan can probably talk more to that if people still have some interest in that. But essentially, we would seek to have condition 17 deleted in the interest of precedence for a similar type of hotel under the same controls in the same area, pretty much the same proximity to public transport as this site as well, in terms of King's Cross Station. And then the final one is condition 21B, which is having individual secure lockable storage facilities of a minimum capacity of 0.6 cubic metres. There's not many hotels where you lock your bag up. You lock your jewellery up in the safe. It's a pretty unusual request, and it's probably, I understand, but it's a standard condition of consent of councils. It's probably more suited to a backpackers or student accommodation type, but the type of clientele, again, they're not going to lock their suitcase up. The rooms are lockable, they are secure, so if anyone, it's like any hotel, you go to the Hilton down the road, you don't have locked wardrobes, it's just your room's locked and that's managed that way, so they would seek to have that removed. Coming back to some of the concerns, in terms of, I think it was David who first spoke, he raised issues in terms of garbage and waste and how it's going to be collected. Well, it's essentially going to be collected the exactly same arrangement as a student accommodation does. It's probably going to be less waste because there's no food waste or the volume of food waste that students are essentially creating. Laundry, delivery, it's all going to be on street from Elizabeth Bay Road. And again, the volume of laundry for a 30-room hotel is not significant. And we would accept if you want to condition the times for those trucks to come during daytime hours, that's fine, that's doable. Smoking on the street's not really something anyone can control. It's obviously... It is an issue everywhere around the city, and you can only put up no smoking signs, but it's not really the operator of the hotel's role to enforce smoking on the street, especially considering there's likely to be non-guests smoking out there. Alex mentioned shadowing, and I'll let Ashkan perhaps address that. It's probably more his cup of tea. And partying on the roof again, if we go back to condition 2D, And you were to approve this proposal that only allowed the guests of room 1 to enter that, it's not going to be a very big party, and it's not likely to get out of hand. And the hotel operators will obviously be on site 24 hours a day to monitor any antisocial behaviour, and I guess that's a risk you have at any hotel in any location. Lisa mentioned the lift overrun. Well, it's pretty clear on the plans, but I'll let Ashkan talk through to that. And I think I touched on some of her concerns about the basement issues. And again, likewise with the roof terrace. And then the height impacts, again, there's previous approval of similar scale and bulk. We have reduced the scale and bulk of the addition on multiple occasions in the last 12 to 18 months at the request of council officers, following objections from neighbours, following potential concerns from councils, in-house heritage and urban designers. We've met every request. We've been through the scrutiny of a design review panel, even though it's a residentially focused design review panel. We went through that for a hotel. We've literally jumped through every hurdle. And now, obviously, and Ashkan can explain, the envelope of those additional two stories is not really visible anywhere from the street. It virtually impossible to see that. So in terms of its potential impact on public domain, it's very, very limited. I'm happy to take any questions.
Look, that's probably might wrap it up there, Matt. Did the panel have any questions? Ashkan, if you want to, if there's other issues in relation to overshadowing bulk that you want to add to any comments that Mr O'Donnell's made, then probably you need to swap seats. And if you could limit your comments to around the 3-minute mark, that would be appreciated.
First thing I'd like to address is the questions regarding services and lift overrun. There is exact reason why we have stair access up to the top unit and not having the lift extend, and that is to minimise the lift overrun. What we are trying to create is a beautiful geometric form up there and not one that's broken up by lots of bits of services that are hanging out of the building. So that means that we can wrap our box sitting on top with the screen all the way around. It hides our lift overrun. We're talking about 33 rooms that can be run on 3 BRB units, which are just a larger split-type unit sitting up in that service area, which is screened on every side. With a room between it and 39 Elizabeth Bay Road. So we put it the maximum distance away from those balconies and those windows of 39 Elizabeth Bay Road and put a building in between it to block out any potential noise, which is still covered under conditions of consent. As far as Mr. Ding and views to from your mother's apartment. What we're actually doing in that part of the building is reducing the height of the existing parapet that sits on that wall. So if you look at the shadow diagrams, we're actually increasing the amount of daylight to that balcony and opening up the view further to what it is. And the roof that was mentioned is an inaccessible roof. So there will be no access as far as security is concerned. Thank you.
As you get the variation you're seeking to allow room one to have access?
The variation we would be seeking would be purely for that area that's shown currently for room one, which is only in front of room one on the northern section of the of that balcony. The rest, we don't mind if it's non-trafficable. And that's approximately 10 metres away from the southern boundary.
Is that concluded? Yeah, okay, thanks. So I can't enter into the debate, but what I appreciate that. Thank you, Ashkan. I'm going to ask Louise Kerr and she will respond again to some of those issues raised by residents. So I'll hand over to Louise.
Through you, Chair. In relation to the issues raised by Mr. Hand, Council's Transport Officer has confirmed that it is acceptable to collect waste from the street curb, and in relation to the ongoing waste management, we are requiring a waste management plan to be submitted to Council, and conditions number 52, 53 and 54 deal with those. That is our standard way of dealing with waste management for applications approved by Council. In response to Mr Ding's issues, solar access is dealt with in paragraph 69, as the architect has alluded, particularly with Unit 11. There's not considered to be an unacceptable impact on solar access to that dwelling. Safety and security, council officers have recommended condition number 2 that would require the communal roof terrace not to be trafficable. I could suggest, if the panel were of a mind, to amend condition number 2 to ensure that details of the mechanism of locking the doors that are available to ensure that it is not trafficable could be a detail that's submitted back to council when the amended plans require sign off by the Director of City Planning. In relation to Lisa Bella's concerns, the condition number 7 deals with the plant overrun, and it is limited in height to an RL of 47.37, and details are required to come back to council's director for sign-off prior to the issue of the construction certificate. The breach to the height control has been dealt with in the clause 4.6 submission that has come, and the council officer's assessment in relation to that, so that justification for the height breach is recorded there. It is unfortunate that the that changes of uses may be permitted through the CDC, but what is put before the committee is for it to be a survey area associated with the use of the hotel. And so I've mentioned access to the terrace, which the owner of Owners Corporation of 39 articulated. The impact on solar access for both units 7, 9 and 11 of 39 Elizabeth Street are considered in the report, and particularly in paragraph 63 to 73.
It would also be good just to respond to the requested amendment to conditions by the applicant.
In relation to the request to delete the requirement, I'll start again. In relation to the request to allow part of the roof terrace to be used by all the occupants of the adjoining room, Council's Heritage Officer had raised some concerns with any structure that would be placed on the terrace to try and provide some type of privacy to the occupants of that terrace. So from our perspective, we would not recommend that be allowed. In addition, it becomes more difficult in being able to manage patron noise and behaviour, which has been articulated by the residents. So that, in our opinion, wouldn't be recommended. It would be open to the panel to extend the hours from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. As requested. So that's the panel to determine in the basement. Standard condition 17, it is a standard condition, but we would seek to encourage bicycle parking where required, and we don't believe that there's any valid reason why it shouldn't be provided in this particular instance. And in relation to condition 21B and the proposed deletion of the storage areas, once again, that is a standard requirement. As we've advised in the assessment report, we are concerned by the internal amenity of some of the rooms, and in particular the capacity to have adequate storage facilities. So that condition would support better internal amenity being provided.
Thank you. So, look, does the panel have any questions, observations that they would like to make? I'm going to suggest we might briefly adjourn to discuss this matter, but were there any points now that people would like to raise? We will have a brief adjournment. Just prior to that, I just want to check other people are in the room for item nine. Is there? Yeah, item nine. Are there any other speakers in relation to any other items on the agenda tonight? So what we might do is we'll complete dealing with item 3, then we'll bring forward item 9 so that you don't have to wait any longer. I can't allow endless interface, but we will come back. We're not going to go off and rubber stamp plans. We will come back to make the decision, and there may be an opportunity for further points to be made, but it's not possible to have an ongoing dialogue. I think you've all made your points very clearly. We have some responses made by the applicant and also by council planning staff. We just now need to consider a couple of things. We will adjourn and we will resume shortly. So thank you. Okay, meeting resumed. Thank you for your patience. So the panel has considered all the issues that have been raised by residents and the applicant. And look, on balance, the panel is of the view that the application is approvable, but there are a couple of conditions that we want to amend. And in particular, we want to tighten up the regime, if you like, the operating regime, the approval regime around the outside area of open space on the rooftop. We don't actually support, although we did consider, the option of allowing Room 1 to have access to it, and so therefore, I guess in a sense, privatising that space to bring some additional control. It is clearly it's a touchstone issue for adjoining residents and has been through the existing development on the site, but we have some tightening of condition 2 that I'm going to ask Mr. Romy to read out so people can hear the way in which the panel is going to deal with this particular issue. So, Peter, if you could do that.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment, or the amended condition 2C, will now read: the private terrace to the proposed roof terrace, it says plan, superfluous, is not approved. The door from room 1 on plan DA08, revision E, is not approved and is to be replaced with an openable awning or casement window, which is to have a minimum 750mm depth awning to provide weather protection for the full width of the opening. The rest of that clause is deleted. So the reference to the private terrace... Oh, sorry. Yes, the rest of that clause is deleted. Subclause D, the private terrace and community garden as shown on plan DA08, revision E, are not approved to be trafficable. A pebble finish is required. The roof terrace is to be accessed only for maintenance purposes. And then the next sentence, the words "a window to room 1 on plan DA08E is not approved and is deleted. A new sentence starts, the doors to this area from delete room 1 and insert the corridor must be deleted and replace with one or more non-openable windows. The area is to be incorporated into the rooftop. The area is to be incorporated into the rooftop terrace area. I'm not sure that's necessary. Delete that. This area is to be incorporated into the rooftop terrace area. So effectively what we're saying is that the double doors that did provide access to what was referred to on the drawings as the private terrace and a community garden will be replaced by one or more windows which are non-openable. So there's no access to what is now what will be a roof rather than a terrace from within that common area. But the what was the door shown from room 1 will be replaced by an openable window to what it will now be simply roof area. And the reason for the opening window is to enable a maintenance person to get out there if they have to for any reason, say to clean the gutters or whatever.
Thanks, Peter. So that amendment is designed to, you know, the reasonable point made that it's difficult to condition behaviour. So this will certainly manage behaviour more effectively on an area that I think has been contentious for residents. And so that is one of the fundamental changes we're proposing. In response to some of the other issues in relation to garbage and deliveries, there is a condition and Louise might remind me, I think it could be condition 18, that that relates to the hours for deliveries, which is from 7 in the between 7 in the morning and 8 p.m. at night, weekdays. So there is some restriction on that early morning operation. The applicant is also required to provide a waste management plan, which will is an opportunity to address the time and manner of pickup of waste. So I think that's an area where we can do something in terms of protecting resident amenity. I think the applicant has reasonably requested that the what's called the servery area is at closing at 8 p.m. at night is a bit tight and has requested an extension to 10 p.m. The panel is of a mind to support that. It's a contained area within the building where, you know, there'll be relatively quiet uses, so I don't think there is any reason not to permit that extension. So that is a variation to condition 5, which will simply substitute 8 p.m. with 10 p.m. So they are the two conditions that we're substantively amending, and what I'm going to do now is put that proposal that we support the approval of this application subject to those two amendments. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
And declare that carried unanimously. I thank everyone for their time, applicant and residents, for coming and putting your case. And please be assured we've listened carefully to concerns and tried to come up with some ways to manage this difficult interface between residents and commercial uses, and hope that, in particular, the hotel going forward can prove to be a good neighbour to the adjoining residents. And I thank you all for your time. So what I'm going to do now is bring forward, thank you very much, bring forward item 9, because we have some residents who want to speak to that item. Mr. Carter has now returned to the meeting, and I'm going to ask Bill Mackay to please just run us through item 9. Thank you.
So this is an application made by council for the construction of a public toilet and the carrying out of some associated landscaping on William Street in just off Oxford Street. The land, the subject of the application, falls within two zones. The landscape area falls within the SP2 infrastructure zone, and the toilet facility falls within the B4 mixed-use zone. The proposal, as amended, is permissible with consent. So the application is recommended for approval, subject to conditions. The application was notified twice, first in July and August of last year, and then in October of last year. The second notification was a result of the amended plans. The application, as originally submitted, had the toilet facility straddling the zone boundaries. The toilet is prohibited within the SP2 zone, so the application was amended and the toilet facility reorientated so that it is wholly contained within the other zone and is now permissible. 43 owners and occupiers were notified, four submissions and one petition with 38 signatures were received. The submissions raised a number of issues, including noise from the use of the facility, public safety issues, the fact that existing toilet facilities exist in private businesses in the locality. The development would detract from the character of the area. Security issues in relation to adjoining Telstra facilities, odour impacts from the development. So this slide shows the approximate location of the facility identified by the dotted circle. The land, the subject of the application, is identified in red, and the submissions have come from adjoining and surrounding premises. So this is a view of the site from Oxford Street, so it's where that existing landscaped planter bed is located. That's the Telstra building immediately adjoining the site to the south, and to the north you have a Mitre 10 building on the opposite side of William Street. The area you can see in the photograph that looks like a car park is part of William Street. So this is the site plan of the amended proposal. So the toilet facility has been relocated so it faces outwards towards Oxford Street. It's now contained completely within the B4 zone. And then there's some associated landscaping and a tree planting on the street. The next set of slides are just the elevations of the facility. So it's a standard JC Deco design that you have elsewhere in the city. In terms of the key controls, they are the zone and the permissibility of the development, as mentioned, as originally submitted, because the structure fell partly within the SP2 infrastructure zone. It was prohibited. The application has been amended such that the structure now falls wholly within the B4 mixed-use zone. And the site is also located within a heritage conservation area. So the application as amended is now permissible. That issue with the SP2 zone has been resolved. This slide shows the location of the two zones. So the yellow along Oxford Street is the SP2 zone, and the blue in William Street and the buildings adjacent to Oxford Street is the B4 zone. So the facility has now been located wholly to be within the B4 zone. In terms of the conservation area, the design of the facility is the standard City of Sydney design. There isn't any commercial advertising proposed in relation to this facility. It's located within a mixed streetscape, and the adjoining buildings, the Telstra building to the south and the Mitre 10 building to the north, are both identified as detracting buildings within the conservation area. So the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. So I have three resident speakers. I'll start with Dr. Mary Carney. No? Okay, all right. So Margaret Desterios.
Good evening. I'm Margaret Desterios and I'm a resident of Paddington in Regent Street since I purchased my property 40 years ago. I have represented the area as a councillor from 1991 to 2000, when Paddington, south of Oxford Street, was part of the city of South Sydney. I'm very much against a toilet in Oxford Street, and I believe it was conditioned, or it was considered in 2014. I think that's a little outdated now. There have been many changes in the Oxford Street shopping strip, and the area remains a focal point for the residents of both sides of Oxford Street that is governed by Woollahra on one side on the north and the City of Sydney on the south. There are far more toilets in the area than there have been, say, in the last 20 years. Four hotels, numerous cafes, coffee shops, the library, the Paddington Town Hall, all have toilets. The Paddington School and the Uniting Church site have 21 toilets, including one disabled for use for the Paddington markets on Saturday. And that's when there's mostly a number of people around that are part of shopping on Saturday, except after the football stadium is after their events, when the area is crowded. There are ample toilets for use in this area. I've spoken to long-term stallholders in the Paddington markets about the present DA. Each have said they did not believe that they had a need, especially from the crowds that the market generates on the Saturday. I've spoken to business owners on both the Woollahra and the south side of Oxford Street, and some reminded me of a time of the business downturn and there were over one-third of the shops vacant. It was a dismal sight to see empty, boarded-up shops. The shops are all coming back, so let's not destroy the area. It's fragile when we have, you know, Bondi Junction is very a thriving centre nearby. Paddington is considered one of the most intact, or is the most intact, Victorian village outside the UK. And as a community, we should savour every aspect of this historic area that was built over 150 years ago. To have photographs, as the report suggests, to remind us of what the area is like. Let's preserve the area. We do not need photographs of plants of the site of the proposed toilet. Actually, there's two properties facing this. Their rear upper, above their garages, they have open space. And they're within a less than, I'd say, 60 metres, which is right next behind the Mitre 10 site. And as far as heritage goes, we have the Paddington Inn across the road. So, but that is in the Woollahra side. Within my written submission, there were 42. There was a petition of 42 local residents that opposed this proposal. The area is awash with people after any major sporting event, and it's rather naive to think that the toilets would not be used by, say, drug dealers, regardless of what colour lights are installed in the toilets. I mean, that goes without saying throughout the city. Whilst a toilet is worthy of consideration, it is not in the best interests of the community and it's a health and safety concern best avoided. I may also add there were toilets next to the Paddington Town Hall for many years. They were actually adjacent to the barracks, so there's plenty of water there to place toilets there if one feels there's a need. There's the Paddington Reservoir downstairs where there's plenty of water. There's no toilets there and it could be a site. Not on the upper level downstairs, which is open through daylight hours. I believe it's locked up at night and opened first thing in the morning. I just am very much against defacing Paddington with a toilet, which was a decision made in 2014. I think there was a so-called toilet policy. And it has come before a council before, and I have spoken against it before. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
So, Mary, would you like to go now?
Can you hear me? I wasn't here when you introduced yourselves, but I believe we have a heritage architect amongst the group, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. You've heard from Margaret that many of the objections have been on the basis of the items that you've listed. There's been quite a community consensus over years over this issue. We don't want this toilet. We've been trying to get rid of it. It keeps reappearing, and it now has been recommended to be approved, and this has gone down like a lead balloon amongst the neighbourhood. We have a resident group called the South Paddington Residents Association, and there is no one is supporting this toilet. My concern is when I came back from Europe many years ago, I want to live in a neighbourhood which has heritage value. I want to live in a neighbourhood which was attractive to live in. What this toilet will do to this neighbourhood is diminish that, and the proximity to number 6 and number 8 in Regent Street, they have decks that will overlook this toilet. We also have another place at 2 to 4 Regent Street, which is actually in the park, which is part of park gallery, part residence. It will be close enough that it will get the odour from the toilets. It's just basically putting in our neighbourhood something that we don't require and don't want and is ugly. Now, I was getting the taxi here tonight in a great rush, coming from work, and I swung around. I did take a picture of the sites that you've shown, the one that's up on the screen now, but then I swung around 180 degrees, and on the other side of the road is a 1880s hotel, which has very high heritage value. And this is directly opposite. So if you swing around just even 90 degrees, you're looking from that, which is an eyesore, I agree with you, to a heritage valued street, including a heritage value hotel, the Paddington Inn. these are very, we don't have many of these things in Australia, and here we are trying to make it worse. And so when I came back from overseas to live back in Australia, I was reminded this afternoon of this great Australian ugliness. Do we want to perpetuate this ugliness, or do we want to try and make it better? Now, I'm not saying that what we're looking at on this screen is beautiful. It's not. It sits there for reasons probably from the 1960s, where they demolished buildings that had heritage value and built that. And I wouldn't say that's a very attractive thing. But it doesn't mean that the whole area aesthetically looks like that. It doesn't. The area aesthetically is very beautiful. And if you walk around the streets of South Paddington, it's quite beautiful. And it's human-sized, and we really don't need this toilet because there are so many toilets. During the Mr. Rudd's building revolution, I think 20 toilets were put in the Paddington markets, in the Paddington Primary School. So why do we need this toilet? So I would go with what Margaret has said. Let's put it, if we must have it, then let's not put it there. Let's find another poem for it. Because it's universally nobody wants it. And mainly, I mean, my position is aesthetic. I don't think it should go there. You're just making an ugly place more ugly. And you're putting it right smack in the middle of a conservation zone. It makes no sense. And so if I can defend Australia one more time and let's keep Australia not ugly, but rather beautiful as it could be if we look carefully at what we develop in this country. Thank you.
I've got Peter Gow. Maybe I haven't. No, Peter's not here. And did either of you know want to speak? No. Are you here for this item? No. 7 and 8. Okay. Okay. Fine. So. Perhaps what I'll do now, if the panel has any questions or observations, feel free to make them now, or I will ask Louise Kerr to respond to some of the issues that have been raised by the local residents.
Through you, Chair. The Council's Heritage officers have considered the application are satisfied that the proposed toilet structure won't have any adverse impacts on the heritage conservation area or heritage items which are located within the close proximity to the site. In relation to Council's public toilet strategy, this area has been identified as an area which is in need of additional public toilets, and this site has been selected because of its proximity to the little local shopping centre and where most of the action occurs. In relation to the comments made about the number of toilets available at the primary school, yes, it's acknowledged that they're available on Saturdays during the markets, but on Sundays and Monday through to Friday, they would not be available for use by the general public. They would only be available for the school students. So that wouldn't satisfy the demand. And Council's perspective, it would be unreasonable for members of the public to have to rely upon toilets that are located in businesses. So, yeah, that probably answers those questions.
Any views from the panel that they would like to share on this matter? I mean, look, yes.
A brief response about the design. I mean, yes. I'm a heritage architect. I don't see any, in principle, problem with well-designed contemporary elements being placed within areas that have high heritage value. I mean, you mentioned overseas, well, London, people at both places like London and Paris are full of these kinds of contradictions. If they're well designed, one doesn't necessarily detract from the other. I've seen plenty of toilet blocks I would not like to see in this location or in any location, and you don't have to go back very far to remember the ones that were usually designed by the council engineers. That is not the case here. And I think that the fact that it's such a prosaic use, yes, it's a toilet blocks, but a block, but if it's well designed, I think it can be quite compatible with its significant, very, as you say correctly, very significant, very historic context. So I support the application.
Look, the only observation I'll make is that at the end of the day, as a panel, as well as considering the merits of applications, we do need to look at the strategic underpinning for proposals. I mean, there is a public toilet strategy that identifies the lack of public toilets in Darlinghurst and Paddington south of Taylor Square, particularly those with 24-hour access. So, you know, while there are alternative facilities, perhaps during daylight hours, and others might question that, you know, it is a 24-hour city. The council does have issues with public urination in streets that it has to deal with. The council, one arm of council has put this forward because they see a need for it in this location. I guess they see this as the least worst option for doing it, and you have to admit that it is a bit compromised by the adjoining buildings. But there is a strategic underpinning for this. It's not been dreamt up. There has been a strategy done. So on that basis, I'm prepared to support it. If council eventually at some point realises they've made a mistake in choosing this location, it's not the sort of use that can't be withdrawn relatively easily with a licensed plumber. So if there are no other comments, I've got Sean Carter.
I'd just like to make a comment. From an urban design point of view, the location of that toilet in that area, which is visible in the public realm, I mean, there was some concerns about drug dealers or dubious people using these toilets. I would say by and large people would use these toilets because there is a need for it. And given the public surveillance, it's just outside the zoning, it's on a public street, it's visible to all. That passive surveillance of all of us seeing that toilet there, I think would provide a level of security that would support it being in that location.
John, look, I'm going to put this proposal to the panel. I'm going to support the officer's recommendation. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I declare that carried unanimously. I would like to thank people for attending to discuss that item. I understand it's a sensitive issue, but I hope in time it will prove to be a successful outcome. Thank you very much for attending. We turn to item 7. We do have speakers in the room in relation to items 7 and 8. You don't want to speak? Can I just check, are you on behalf of the applicant or are you local residents? You're on behalf of the applicant. Oh, okay. But you seem to be not fighting each other. Okay. That's very good. Okay. Well, we will bring those items forward as we have interested parties in the room. I will ask Bill just to briefly run through, and they're very similar applications, so I think you just need to run through the main aspects of one prior to the panel determining the matter.
Thank you. Okay, so there are two applications, one for 82 City Road and one for 84 City Road, and they're essentially for much the same form of development. So this presentation is in relation to 82 City Road. The application seeks consent for alteration additions to an existing boarding house on the site, which includes the construction of a new building to the laneway to the rear of the site, and overall would include the addition of one extra room within the boarding house. The proposed occupancy of the boarding house is a maximum of 13 persons. The site is located within an R1 general residential area and is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for refusal. The application was notified in September of last year. 37 owners and occupiers were notified and 6 submissions were received. The submissions related to the bulk and scale of the development, compliance with the controls and the appropriate management of the site. So this is the site identified in red, and the submissions came from residential properties immediately adjacent to the rear on the opposite side of Mays Lane. So this is the site located on the east side of City Road with a frontage to the rear to Mays Lane. This is the site viewed from City Road, and that's the frontage of the site to City Road, and this is some illustrations of the existing buildings to the rear. This is the existing rear yard with access to the laneway. And this is a view of the site from the lane, and these are some views of the site viewed from up and down the laneway. This is a ground floor plan of the proposal, so there's internal alterations to the existing building. It's a two-storey addition to the rear of the building, and then there's a new building built to the laneway, and that building will contain a communal room on the ground floor, a new boarding room on the upper level. Access to that upper level room will be via an elevated walkway. This is the first floor plan. You can see the second floor of the two-storey addition to the rear and that second level of the building to the laneway. And within the roof of the existing terrace, there will also be two rooms, which also includes the provision of a dormer addition. This is a section through the development, so you can see the scale of the additions to the rear, and that two-storey addition to the rear of the terrace and the building to the laneway is separated by approximately 2 metres. This is the elevation to the rear on Mays Lane, so a new building to the laneway, two-storey addition behind that, and then a dormer window to the existing roof. And this is the view of the building City Round. And that's a view of both buildings from the laneway, both 82 and 84, so almost identical proposal. In terms of compliance with the relevant controls, in terms of the affordable housing set, there is a requirement for a communal living room. A communal living room is provided, has an area of approximately 70 square metres. The minimum requirement under the DCP is 20 square metres. So they're provided a communal facility, but it falls short on the minimum area. The affordable housing set also has minimum room size provisions. The minimum room size is 12 square metres. Six of the rooms are less than 12 square metres. On this site, the smallest room is approximately 9 square metres, so 55% of rooms are non-compliant. There are controls in terms of number of lodgers per room. So any room that is less than 16 square metres can have a maximum of one lodger. Above 16 square metres, you can have two. The applicant's proposing 9 rooms with one occupant, 2 rooms with 2 occupants with a maximum capacity of 13. So it complies with the maximum number of people per room, but the room sizes for a number of the rooms are below the minimum. There is an open space requirement within the set, and that excludes open space within a front setback. So there isn't really any usable communal open space to the rear of the development. All of that open space to the rear is only a 2 metre separation between the proposed addition and the new building to the laneway is essentially circulation space. The affordable housing set, there's also a requirement for bicycle parking spaces, which is complied with, and a requirement for motorcycle parking spaces, which is not complied with. That is a development standard which requires a clause 4.6 variation request. In terms of the LEP standards, there's a non-compliance with the height limit. The dormer window goes above the 9-metre height limit, but is below the maximum height of the existing building. That is also subject to a clause 4.6 variation request. The development complies with the maximum potential permissible floor space ratio. In terms of the DCP, there's a height in stories control of 2 stories. It complies with that control. There is a minimum room size control of 12 square metres, similar to the set requirements. 55% of rooms are non-compliant. There's a requirement for a minimum 20 square metres indoor communal area. They have 17 square metres. There's a non-compliance and a minimum requirement of 20 square metres of external communal space. So the development is non-compliant in that regard. So the issues are essentially the clause 4.6 for height and motorcycle parking. In this instance, the clause 4.6 for height is supported, but the clause 4.6 for motorcycle parking is not. The amenity within the development, the impacts of the built form and potential solar access impacts. So in terms of height, the clause 4.6 is supported. The height exceedance is limited to the rear dormer only. The proposals below the height of the existing ridge line of the existing building, and there are no significant adverse impacts arising from that non-compliance. In terms of motorcycle parking, the set requires two spaces to be provided. No spaces are provided. Clause 4.6 is not supported in this instance. The site has access to a laneway. Existing motorcycle parking is available, although on an informal basis. Obviously, the rear yard areas are not well maintained, but it could be provided by the rear lane, but the new building doesn't make any provision for that. In terms of amenity within the development, 55% of the rooms are undersized, the smallest room being 9 square metres. Rooms include undersized living areas, kitchens, en-suites and robes. All rooms have at least one non-compliant element, although some of them might meet the minimum area requirement. They all don't comply in regard to one component of the controls. And the communal living area is undersized and with poor amenity. There's no usable communal open space within the development, and the controls require an open space of 20 square metres. And the internal amenity of some of the rooms is borrowed from communal access walkways. In terms of the built form of the development, the controls seek to maintain the established rear building lines within terraces. So there's a variation of the rear building line at the ground and first floor level with that two-storey addition. There's 2 metres building separation between that addition and the rear building adjacent to the laneway, which provides a limited visual break in the built form, and there are also elevated walkways that project into that space. So this illustration shows the existing rear alignments of the terraces and the proposed built form. So the proposed addition to the rear projects quite a way beyond the existing alignment of the two-storey components of the terraces. In terms of solar access, the solar access diagrams are considered to be inadequate with the existing impacts not fully shown. And the adjoining boarding house to the south, that's at number 84, is unlikely to receive adequate solar access as a result of this development. Obviously, number 84 will have an impact on the dwelling to the south of that. So the application is recommended for refusal. Thank you.
And, Bill, that's the same applies essentially to item 8, which is at 84 City Road. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So... So nobody in the gallery wants to speak. I'll ask the panel if there's any observations they want to make.
I'll just make a quick observation. This use could be suitable for these types of dwellings. Boarding houses are at 12 square metres for a room, and someone's life is contained in those 12 square metres. I think it's fundamental, because these rooms are potentially have the least amount of amenity of all our different housing types, and we need a diversity of housing types, so boarding houses are a very important element in that diversity. But I think it's fundamental we get those minimum requirements right. I think you can do that with these buildings. You haven't with this proposal today, so I'd encourage you, if you want to pursue this use, to hit those minimum numbers. I think it's vital you do that.
Any other comments? Okay. I essentially agree with that comment from Mr. Carter. I think going forward, the compliant room sizes and communal open space are important. I mean, the affordable housing SEP does provide, I think, some fairly conservative numbers conservative in the sense that I think it's actually quite permissible. So I think I don't think it's difficult to get to that 12 square metre landing. I understand there's a financial consideration. I think you need to reduce the extent of the development into the rear yard as well. I think the building line that council planners have identified, it's important to try to respect that as far as possible. And you know, the two-storey structure on the boundary in the rear yard is problematic as well. And some of those outdoor corridors would create amenity issues for adjoining residents. So, unfortunately, it's not the sort of thing where we can, with you know, elegantly crafted conditions, come up with something that's approvable, because it would be a completely different development. But clearly something needs to happen with those two dwellings, and I think I agree with Mr. Carter. I think a boarding house is an important part of the mix of housing in Sydney. So I would encourage you to work with council officers, bearing in mind the points made by the panel, to try to come up with something that is approvable going forward. But in the interim, I'm going to put the officer's recommendation in relation to item 7 for refusal for the reasons specified. All in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Carried unanimously. I'm going to do the same in relation to item 8. Put the officer's recommendation for refusal. All in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Aye, and it's carried unanimously. I do thank the developer and local resident for attending, and hopefully an outcome going forward can be found. Maybe you guys can sort it out. Thank you very much. So we do have a few items left on the agenda to deal with. I'm going to just formally note, as I did in the introduction, that we're unable to determine items 5 and 6 because we're unable to get a quorum due to conflict of interest declarations. So those items are formally deferred to a future meeting. We have not yet dealt with the development application item 4 for Mar Street, Chippendale. I don't have anyone to speak to that item. Do panel members want a presentation on this item, bearing in mind that it was part of the briefing session? Otherwise, I would. Was there any proposed changes to conditions of consent for that?
No, I
think we're all comfortable with what's been recommended by the officer's report. So I'll put the recommendation for approval subject to conditions. All in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried unanimously. We have dealt with 7, 8, 9, so all that remains is item 10. Please correct me if I'm wrong, because we've jumped around a bit, but it's only item 10, which is for shade structures in Sydney Park, allied to a skate park proposal. Again, we received a briefing on this matter. I don't think we need a formal briefing now. I'll put that up, officer's recommendation for approval. All in favour, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And it's carried unanimously. So that deals with all items on the agenda, I think, staff that are left, and panel members for contributing. And I'll formally close the meeting. Thank you all.